Next page in our account is 98-1608, Key Corp versus Driver Denver Fisher Tax. Justice Resnick has refused her compensation. Very pleased to have sitting in place of Justice Resnick, Sir Howard Sunders, Judge of the Court of Appeals of Ohio, sitting in the First District of Mr. Burnett. Burner, excuse me.
May I please report, I did welcome to serve now for 2 months here. Society Corporation is now a Key Corp. It is a holding company, and its sole purpose is to hold the stock of other companies. And it's a bank holding company because it had banks as the companies that it owned, and that's significant because that means that as a bank holding company, is subject to special regulation by the federal, in this case, federal regulators. When it found its returns, franchise tax returns, it used the net worth method of determining the tax because that creates a higher tax compared to the net income measure. When it filed the return, which is a balance sheet, a tax based on the balance sheet, it excluded the investment in the banks. And in this case, it's actually a ratio of the assets in the bank versus total assets. And it excluded that investment. The tax commissioner came in and permitted the exclusion with respect to capital stock, but added back the indebtedness from the bank. And the indebtedness was to the lead bank, the Society National Bank, back to the holding company. And so that indebtedness all had to be. None of the indebtedness was permitted by the tax commission. There are three types of indebtedness at issue in this case. The first is a repurchase agreement, which is a loan from Society National Bank, or to Society National Bank from Society Corp, and it is secured by government securities. There are euro-dollar deposits, which are deposits with a branch, and that's Society National Bank, and it is a part of the bank is not a separate corporation. And the reason they have it offshore is so that they can have all of that money available for investing. They don't have to pay the premiums on that, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, and it's not subject to the reserve requirements, but it's still part of the bank. And then there are bank accounts. And what we're talking about here is the funding of the bank operations. The bank always is in market for funds so that they can go out and make money, create value. And they have a choice of going to the Federal Reserve, they can go to a third party, or they go to their parent. And if the parent has funds, then that's where the source of the funding comes from.
If I go to the bank,
you would be, you wouldn't, it might be an investment for you, but it certainly is not an investment under the terms of the statute.
I don't have as much problem with the first one, but I don't see how the second and third are much different from my going and putting money in the account so that I can take out the whenever I want to be made, by the way, pay me a buck or two interest or something like that. How is your second and third different from you just going there and doing it as a deposit account? You may make up to of interest overnight and then taking it out of it. I'm having a lot of trouble seeing the contingency from that meeting for the customer of the bank.
Right. And I think what's important is not the nature of a particular instrument. What is crucial is the relationship between the holding company and the bank. And so our position is you don't focus on, yes, you could have a deposit with the bank, but of course you're not a holding company. You're not a 25% greater owner. Once the relationship is established, then the nature of the investment is not important. So even though it's true that you could have a deposit with the bank, you're not subject to the regulation. You're not really going to realize benefit if the bank does well. You'll realize benefit if you get a return on your checking account or if you have the access to funds when you want them. But what's important is that the holding company will benefit when these funds go down there. And
your whole argument focuses on definitions with debt. identity, their clients can be able to two different meetings and two different contexts. And now you're telling me that the customer kind of different than the money is. I guess I'm still not following why that's any different, because you're holding company because of regulation. Why is it any different from that when you're sitting in a checking account that is a money thing? Is it checking account that is the item that the company is? Can you see that?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And I would think, I'm not arguing that they are different. That the account that the holding company has is fundamentally legally different in terms of that relationship. But what I'm saying is,
are you agreeing that the last two are similar to my hypothetical?
Well, the only difference is a year ago, or you can't invest that way. That's something between the banks and the holding company. You can't just go in and get it.
You're basically a bank for a bank.
Well, I see what you're saying. No, I don't think that's really what's going on here at all. In other words, we're not just depositing like you would deposit with the bank and establish that account so that you can use it when you want to use it. Because before you get to we don't need to show you that these accounts are different than other kinds of investments that you could buy in the bank. What we need to show is that there is this special relationship between the holding company and the bank. Look at it from the bank's perspective. First, from the holding company perspective, they realize value because of the investment in the bank. That's how they realize their value. And Mr. Macy said, for example, unlike what I think your analysis would be, Your Honor, if you had funds to invest, you'd go out and see what's the best source, what's the best rate I can get on this return. I can get more on this checking account versus that. Mr. Macy, when he's looking at it, he was the one who was in charge of investing, didn't even look at those questions. What he looked at was, I need to provide funds to the bank so the bank can go out and make money and I can realize I'm doing what's right for the holding company, because then the holding company realizes the additional value from the investment. So it isn't a question of whether this account is unique to banks. It doesn't need to be. What is unique is that initial relationship we're talking about, more than 25% of them, it's a bank holding company. And from the bank's perspective, they can go out and get funds from a number of different places. It gets it from the holding company. And that's the normal part of this funding operation. What we focused on is the plain meaning of the statute and the fact that it is an indebtedness. The second part that we're trying to show is that it is an entirely reasonable result to focus on the plain meaning of the statute and find that these are excludable. And turning to the statute, pages 9 and 54, 9 is the extract and 54 is the fourth. You can see that the crucial language is investments in capital stock and indebtedness. And then the crucial element is, in order to qualify, it has to be in a controlled subsidiary bank. And that's clearly true. It's 100% of the bank in this case.
Do you agree that the phrase has to be read investment in indebtedness?
I actually think, Your Honor, that the crucial word, again, going back to the idea that it's that relationship, the crucial word is actually investment. That's the word you focus on first. And what you say is, it's the investment in the bank. And then it's investment in one of two things, either capital stock or indebtedness. So we would focus on the investment first. And if it said investment in capital stock, we have no case. But it doesn't say that. It says investment in capital stock and indebtedness. And I think it explains it. But the other side says don't do it that way. Look at it, start with indebtedness, and say it has to be an investment in indebtedness. The one thing is clear. The statute says investment in capital stock and indebtedness. So if it's investment in indebtedness, it's also investment in capital stock. But capital stock qualifies. There's nothing different about investment in capital stock versus capital stock. I think the same reading applies here. It's indebtedness.
Okay, well, what do you say? Capital stock qualifies without investment in capital stock?
Investment in capital stock is not different than capital stock itself. And we have not been able to...
Well, you have to have some action word, don't you?
Sure. And the action word, I think, is very important in terms of being investment.
I mean, it has to be paired. Capital stocks, just the two, those two words alone are fairly meaningless. What about capital stock? You know, it has to be investment in capital stocks. You would say that that investment, the word investment, superfluous there?
No, I'm not really saying superfluous, but I'm trying to get to what it means.
Yeah.
I actually think that if you were going to say that, investment, if you just added, you could put in just capital stock.
But you'd have to have ownership of capital stock or something about capital stock.
But in terms of looking at it, I do believe that the investment is an important word here. And I think that's what's different. When you put money into a checking account, you're not investing in the bank. But when the holding company puts money into the bank, in whatever format it is investing in that bank.
And why? Yeah, why do you think? Why?
Why does that
amount to an investment? Because of the relationship between
Absolutely.
The two entities?
Absolutely. And what's going on and what they're doing and what they're trying to do is to get the funds into the bank. And if the bank doesn't get it from the holding company, it's going to get it from a third party. And so, or the Federal Reserve. So it is just simply funding the bank's operation.
Mm-hmm.
And the choice of vehicle is not...
But that sounds, see, now you use the word operations, and I think that really seems to be very much the argument of the commissioner, is that operations wouldn't be the same, you know, to support it on a day-to-day operations would not be the equivalent of an investment in indebtedness or an investment in capital stock.
Well, I think, Your Honor, first of all, that it is working capital. It's mm-hmm. exactly what we're talking about. I think the daily aspects of it is business leading because of every single
Yeah, I understand.
The bank holding company has these funds available. Every
it's a turnover,
day.
Right.
Is there any transaction that it's a customer?
I'm sorry?
Does it ever become a customer instead of an investor in the bank?
No. And as now, it's not a customer at all. And, you know, the regulators are making sure that it maintains its relationship with them. I mean, they have to maintain the fact that they're a holding company is a significant...
So it's impossible for them to be a customer.
Well, for example, Your Honor, you as a customer, as a depositor of certain rights, you're going to get your funds out. The holding company is way behind you in terms of the ability to be protected if something goes wrong. And is that really, that's what makes you different than the holding company.
So it's never a customer, always an investment.
Absolutely, yes. It's never a customer. Because it owns the bank, it just really is. That's right.
Is there any significance with regard to the question of proof that never was there any written agreement submitted? It was just receipts to try to verify the transaction?
Your Honor, everything is receipted. What we show that each one of these transactions, even though they're happening all the time, I mean, there is a $0 document that defines that relationship. There is on the repurchase agreement. If they are doing it daily, they're documenting it every day. Because of the regulatory environment, they have to do everything just by the book. There's nothing casual or informal about it because of what we're worried about here. What we're worried about is making sure that depositors are protected. And the way you do that is make sure that the funds are in the bank. And now we have a tax statute that just simply gives an incentive to fund the bank, as opposed, because what happens is you have a holding company, it's got a bank, and it's got non-bank activities. And there's a desire that the capital be maintained, that the funds be maintained to different things in the bank for the protection of the bank to make sure the bank is strong. And this tax statute provides this incentive to, when you're going to be doing the investing, invest in the bank and not in the non-banking activities. So don't take what's happening at the bank and put it someplace else in the non-banking operation. And I will reserve the rest of my time for my mind.
Thank you, Burnett. Werner. Mr. Farron.
You have three chances.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court.
First, I'd like to respond to Mr. Burner's answer to Justice Bradley's question. I don't see anything in the statute that would support any argument that for a difference between any of us making a deposit in a bank and a bank holding company making a deposit in a bank. It's not an investment. All the bank gets out of that deposit is exactly what we would get out. It's only entitled to its money back and any interest on that money. That's precisely what we're entitled to. If it has an investment in the bank, it has stock, it realizes money on that investment. If it owns bank notes, debentures, and so forth, it realizes money on that investment. It can buy and sell those investments. But there's simply no basis in the statute for suggesting that a bank holding company's deposits somehow are different than any individual's deposits in the banks.
I guess the theory that's advanced is that because of the relationship between the two institutions, somewhat symbiotic, that the float, that I would almost think of it as a float, a daily influx of cash to support the, you know, the depositors, is a type of investment that, I mean, why isn't an investment in the indebtedness because of the relationship being, the holding company being the supporter?
Well, I think the point is, an investment, you realize you have an interest in the stock or the debt of the corporation. You realize your investment by what happens with the bank. With a deposit, no matter who you are, you only get your money back and any interest on that deposit. There's no requirement, and certainly nothing in the arguments of the records to support Mr. Burner's suggestion that somehow the federal regulations require holding companies to make minimum deposits in bank. I'm not aware of it, and certainly not been cited. Of course, like anybody who works for a company, they may like to buy things from their company because it helps the company. But that's not an investment in their company. By work with the limited, by clothes with the limited, that doesn't make me an investment with the limited. I'm just buying clothes, and I owe money if I buy clothes from there. But I think the difference is the language of the statute. The language of the statute is investments in the capital stock and indebtedness of the financial institution.
Investments and indebtedness resulting from
issuances of securities by corporations, which they use for purpose of obtaining capital to begin or expand their business.
If the bank were to, for some reason, suffer substantial losses to the point that it goes bankrupt, whatever banks do, would the holding company be affected by that condition?
It would be affected in that its ventures would certainly take a nosedive in value. As a depositor, it would be, as I understand, the same boat with other depositors.
Its relationship is different than a person who walks in and makes a deposit, the bank goes bad.
But not with respect to its deposits in that bank.
Right.
It's
livelihood, its status is affected by, would be, because of the close relationship.
That's absolutely correct.
So the holding company has some interest other than as just a normal depositor to deposit this money into the bank.
It certainly has an interest, and I'm certain that's why they would choose to deposit in their own bank rather than deposit in some other company's bank. But that doesn't turn that deposit into an investment in indebtedness. That's the point of the commissioner's making. Well, of course, there are good business reasons why a bank holding company would invest in its own banks, why any holding company would do business with its own subsidiary corporation, because ultimately there's going to be some benefit that they receive because their holding company, subsidiary corporation, perform that. But what we're focusing on here is the language of the statute. Reading this, the phrase in the statute in its context, the Board of Tax Appeals rejected the construction advanced by society in this case. To point out that society was trying to read the terms investment and indebtedness as they were two separate terms, not as if they were used in a phrase in which one limited or restricted the other.
Is there any reason to treat one or two of the types of transactions differently than the third? Deposits are pretty clear, I would think. How about the repurchase agreement?
I think the repurchase agreement, as Mr. Burton noted, they're simply loans. And the statute does not refer to loans. It says investments in the capital stock and debtors. And if you contrast that with other statutes in Chapter 5733, you'll see that where the General Assembly intended to have loans included, it did so. In the same section, 573305A, I believe it's the second to last paragraph, it uses the term investment in stock and loans and advances to subsidiaries. In 5733.067, where it's dealing with transactions or with a credit for holding companies' investments in their subsidiaries, it uses the term investment in the capital stock and loans and advances to it, or at least it used to. The General Assembly amended it to take out the advances to language in that statute. Clearly, the General Assembly recognized the difference between loans and investment in indebtedness, which are, I believe, under all the banking laws, clearly reflected, clearly indicated the debt securities or investments.
So it's your position that none of the three qualify, and in fact, it isn't even a close question.
That's my belief, Mike, and I think that was Dr. User's unequivocal opinion. When he looked at these, the language, the statute, he had no question in the investment community. And this, the language in the statute is investment language. His opinion was very clear. None of these types of business would fall within the language of that term. He pointed out the distinction between indebtedness that is issued by a corporation to raise capital for its operations, to begin and to expand its operations, and contracted that with the type of debt that's incurred in the everyday operations of a corporation's business. Making deposits, receiving deposits, making loans are clearly part of the everyday operation of a bank's business. Dr. Buser said so, and more importantly, banking laws clearly say so. 1101.01b, which defines bank, specifically
instead of receiving deposits, it is the usual business of bank. I would submit that this statute presents a case where the plain meaning and the common meaning and commercial meaning of language to statute converges. I don't think anybody who goes into a bank to make a deposit would go in there thinking, I'm going to invest in the indebtedness of this bank. Nor do I think anybody going to make a law would say, I'm going to invest in the indebtedness of the borrower. You're simply making a law.
Your argument, even if we accept their interpretation of the statute, it's not investing in debt, if we accept the interpretation.
That's right.
You know, this would not just be unique to them and the banking business. You probably have it in public utility holding corporations and insurance cartels. Maybe that's not a good word, but insurance holding companies. Are there any more of these cases floating around we should know about?
There are no cases I'm aware of with public utilities or with insurance companies, which are the other two types of entities that fall under this general type of language. With respect to financial institutions, there are certainly cases that are awaiting the outcome, not if it's more technical, but awaiting the outcome of this decision. This would apply to many bank holding companies. And these types of deposits and purchase agreement transactions are fairly common.
Can you take just a moment, Mr. Farron, since we've talked about the law, and I think everything that you had to say is in your brief too, but can you take a minute to tell us how the reduction came about for the several years in question? There's about, last I looked, it was 450 and maybe 300, something like 700,000 or 800,000, whatever it was, for the 90, 91, and 92 tax years, when the commissioner reduced the amount of the assessment. For the Board of Tax Appeals.
Oh, the Board of Tax Appeals
yeah.
reduced the assessment.
Yes.
Because there were two issues before the Board of Tax Appeals. One was the issue before this court. The other was a financial holding company in which the board found in their favor. The result of that finding was that fully one half of the net worth of the bank holding company was not subject to
tax. Commissioner didn't agree with that. Commissioner didn't agree with that holding, did it?
We did not agree with it. But
did you appeal that?
Based on the facts. We had good reason not to agree with it, but the tax commissioner decided not to appeal that issue. It's fairly judicious about the types of issues he appeals, and the commissioner's decision was that they had to appeal that issue. But the result was, now we're only talking about one half of the net worth of the bank holding company, and this would significantly reduce even that. I think it would be instructive to look at other languages, 5733. The General Assembly had intended to give as broad an exclusion as Society of Amicus argued, as Amicus put it. It reads exclusion for all debts owed by the bank to its holding company. The General Assembly could have clearly said so. If you look at 5733.042C7, which deals with transactions between related members, it uses the term indebtedness directly or indirectly owed by the corporation to the related company. It doesn't qualify as investments in indebtedness. It's indebtedness, and therefore, all that covers all debts owed by the corporation to the related member. That provision is part of the sixth legislation, which also added 5733.04I12. That provision is much narrower, very similar to the language at issue in this case. It refers to gains from sales of a taxpayer's investment in the stock or debt of a subsidiary corporation or other entity. That was clearly limited to the sales of securities, both equity and debt securities. That evidence is that the General Assembly knew when it wanted to have a broad coverage for exclusion, it did so. It didn't use investment in indebtedness or investment in debt. It used indebtedness by itself. And actually, that's specifically what Dr. Buser opined would be the language that would be necessary for the types of issues that fall within the exclusionary language issue in this case. I've gone through detail on three joint voluntary banking laws. makes this very clear. Deposits are in one chapter. Investments are in securities are in a separate chapter. Investments in securities are in chapter 1107. The making of deposits to authorities, banks to do so, is in 1109. Finally, even if there is any question about the investments, the court must understand this is an exclusionary provision. It must be strictly construed against the exclusion. And if there's any doubt, it must be ruled against the exclusion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Byrne. Mr. Byrne, if you say it's 53, 5 minutes of time.
Thank you, Your Honor. The first point he's made is in the Bank One case, when you looked at this statute indirectly in order to get at an understanding of another part of the statute, what the court focused on was the control element as being what explains what's happening with this exclusion. We're trying to understand what this exclusion is about. And the court was right then in focusing on the control element. And that's why it's different than the other relationship that we're talking about, because of the special relationship between the investor and the bank. And the investor is the holding company. In terms of, you know, are there any differences, I think the deposits is the hardest one to understand because it's a lot like the other kind of deposits that you have. And one difference I have to admit is that with respect to the other two, the repurchase agreements and the Eurodollars, there's no protection for that. If you have money in the bank, you've got protection under the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation and the reserves set aside for that. None of that is true with respect to these kinds of vehicles, so there is a difference in that respect. I think it's essential to understand the relationship of the holding company is one that's established because of law. It's a conduit. They want to keep the non-banking activities away from the banks, and there was also a question of branching. And so these are set up for reasons of regulatory control. That's why they're there, and there shouldn't be an extra layer of tax for that reason. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Byrne. The case is submitted. We'll be advised of our opinion.